It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Follier here. We say goodbye to Lumia on this day. Hello to Windows 7 Roll-Up and talk about the new Windows 10 mobile build. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Follier, episode 466, recorded Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. It's Calipigious. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with easy step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click, screen rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial right now at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to Harry's.com/windows and get $5 off your first order. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft and all the goodness of Chromebooks in one, wrapped into one. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Paul Thurrott is here from Thurrott.com. He doesn't know anything about Chromebooks. Mary Jo Foley's here from AllAboutMicrosoft.com. AllAboutMicrosoft.com. I'm the guy who keeps talking about Chromebooks, but I'll shut up this time.
He's the guy who makes the dark side fun. It's Leo LaPorte, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Mary Jo. Sorry about the late start today. We were watching the Google I.O. keynote. No mention of Windows Phone at Google I.O. keynote.
That was surprising. Yep. I was kind of waiting for that. But no.
Especially when they brought up YouTube, I thought, this is going to be it.
Somebody did mention that the big bump in Android use was thanks to you, Mary Jo. So that's
good. I know.
Good.
I'm taking the credit. I have a new gamer tag, by the way, Android Phone Girl.
No, stop it.
Just in case.
Oh, boy.
The emails are going to be back.
I know. I'm ready for more emails. They were so fun last week. Let's have more.
Oh, lordy, lordy. I didn't even know Microsoft had a feature phone business.
No. Right. Come on. So you knew this.
Yeah.
Really?
That's because we live in the United States.
Oh.
Right.
Is this Nokia, old Nokia candy bar phones that they have bought?
That's exactly what they are.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So
what's
guess
happening?
What? They don't have them anymore.
Not anymore. They selling them to Nokia? Selling it back to Nokia?
Kind of. Yeah, like in a roundabout way.
Who bought it?
So Microsoft announced this morning before Google I.O. started that they were selling their feature phone business to FIH Mobile, which is a subsidiary of Hanhai Foxconn.
Oh, interesting.
You know those guys.
Yeah.
You know those guys.
They make some other phones, I believe.
They do.
They make a lot of phones, yes.
They might make a couple other phones, yeah.
They have phone-making expertise.
They do. And, you know, they're funny because they've, for a long time, been trying to get into the business themselves instead of making them for other people. They built a huge plant in Brazil. They've got a huge plant coming to India soon. And that's exactly, those are the countries where feature phones sell well.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
That Nokia brand is huge worldwide, primarily not because of the smartphones as much as because of the candy bar phones.
In fact, actually, sorry, just to interject this in a way, one of the big stories of today, not today, literally today, but these days, is that as Apple has seen its smartphone sales kind of taper off, you know, stop growing or stop growing as fast, they look to India for the next big market. But actually, India is not like China. They're not going to have the same success there. And it is kind of interesting that, you know, this kind of phone falls into that right price category for a country like India in ways that, say, the iPhone doesn't.
Right.
Well, India also has, of course, lots of restrictions on phones not made in India. You know, companies that are not Indian.
Apple wanted to sell used iPhones there, refurbished iPhones, because that was the only way to get them down cheap enough to that market.
Couldn't do it. So why do you say this is kind of a way for Nokia to get back involved? Are they in partnership with Foxconn somehow?
So Nokia's getting the brand. They're licensing the brand to Foxconn.
So they still own the brand.
Branded. Well, Microsoft.
They own the Nokia brand, right?
Owned the brand, didn't they?
But the word Nokia doesn't. Yeah.
Nokia owns the brand. Microsoft is licensing the brand.
Right.
So Foxconn will have the brand, is licensing the brand to use in both candy bar phones, which they acquired from Microsoft, and in smartphones, which they have a separate deal with Nokia for.
Got it. Right. Yeah, because there have been rumors that Nokia wanted to get back in the phone business.
Right. So these new phones are going to be Android phones that they're making. Going forward,
not a surprise.
The new smartphones.
Right. Yeah. The smartphones. Sorry. Yeah. So there's multiple levels of this deal. The thing that you want to know if you're watching from a Microsoft side is Microsoft got $350 million for doing this, which is nothing, pretty much.
Or as I joked on Twitter, how to turn a $7.5 billion investment into $350 million in hard cold cash.
I mean, they got something at least, but they're also laying off. Microsoft is laying off 4,500 people as part of this.
Right.
Well, actually, they're transferring them to these FIH Mobile or HMD Global. So they're giving the people who are being cut an option to go to either of those companies.
Hmm.
And that includes a bunch of people in Vietnam, right? Are those?
It does.
In other words, I think that even the Lumias Microsoft recently made were built there, but that must be where they make their feature phones as well.
Right. It may also be the case that they're taking anyone who was involved in manufacturing for them in Vietnam, regardless of which kind of phone they were building.
This is an opportunity.
Hey, guys.
Cut it back a little. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is all, you know, it's just not surprising, right?
It wasn't that surprising, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a timing thing. It's kind of curious.
One wouldn't be surprised if those factories did not shut down and those employees did not lose their job. They just stop working for Microsoft and they start making it for Foxconn.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, when Microsoft bought Nokia's mobile and services business, you know, a couple of years back, I believe at that time they closed a bunch of factories. Mm-hmm. And that
they
was
did.
A big part of the
layoffs there.
The layoffs. But they kept this one in Vietnam. It's kind of interesting. I mean, previous Lumia phones generally were made in China, as you might imagine. And then if you notice recently, if you look at any recent Lumia phone, it actually says made in Vietnam. And that must be this factory.
Hmm.
Right. But to me, the more interesting part of today's announcement wasn't the selling off of the feature phone business, but it was their wording around what's going to happen with Lumia. Because we had been talking on the show about how we thought this was the end of the Lumia brand. And we had said a couple times on Windows Weekly that we didn't think there would be any more new Lumia models launched in calendar 2016. The way Microsoft worded this in their press release was, we're going to continue to support the Lumia 650, 950, 950 XL and our OEM partners. And that's all they said.
Well, the previous sentence says we're going to continue
to develop Windows 10 Mobile.
And develop Windows 10 Mobile, the operating system.
Right.
Okay. And then the phones get supported.
Right.
You know, they don't really, there's not even a little dash of a hint of, and there will be more.
We didn't think there would be.
We knew they were getting rid of the Nokia brand, right? I mean, the Lumia brand. We knew that.
Right.
We
didn't know for a fact.
We didn't. Oh, I thought they had said that.
They had not.
Like, this is our last Lumia phone, whatever
the
900 or whatever. No?
No, that was a rumor.
Oh, okay.
They had never confirmed it.
Well,
so
this kind
me,
of
this
confirms
kind
it.
Of confirming
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Surface is the new name.
We think.
That's the other little bit of speculation here. I mean, does this impact Surface phone rumors at all?
Right.
And I would say not really, right? I mean, it doesn't hint one direction or the other about that kind of thing.
No. And I saw a lot of people on Twitter today saying, well, today would have been the good day to say, hey, we're making Surface phones. No, today actually wouldn't have been a good day to say that.
Why not?
Because Because if they're not going to come out till next year, you're going to kill any remaining inventory sell-off, your OEM's business, everything else. So you don't want to say that today, right?
It's mostly got to be about the partners because Microsoft, I mean, they've already done everything they can to kill this thing. I mean, their own phones. But their goal, as they stated last summer, by the way, and then stated again last fall, was to get more of the phones out there, you know, coming from third parties. And there are a bunch of them. They name them in this little, you know, blurb we're talking about. And some of them are big, you know, PC companies like Acer and HP. And some of them are these kind of local phone maker types that maybe aren't too famous in these parts, but are maybe in other parts of the world. But yeah, you don't want to harm those folks because they're your hope for the future of the market.
Right.
Well, this would be a good time then to say what a great brand Lumia was, what great phones those Lumias were.
Sure.
I think...
And if you have one, you're going to continue to be supported. It's going...
Nice.
Many of
That's
them
good.
Are being Windows upgraded 10. To Windows 10. Not all, obviously, but many.
Well, the Icon, that was nice.
That was nice.
Yeah. Do you still have it, like, in the drawer?
I do.
Looking at it every once in a while.
Oh, it's so nice.
Aww, I miss you.
I do miss it, actually. So I really still hope Microsoft does something in phones. And I wrote a piece today saying, you know, it's not going to be them going head-to-head with Apple or Google. That's not what they're going to do next year if they end up rebooting Surface Phone and making that a thing. That's going to be a business device if it ever does come to market. It's going to be kind of like... the HP Elite X3 that we've talked about. You know, it's going to be aimed at business customers. It's going to be very dependent on Continuum and remote desktop. I think that's where they're going to go with Surface Phone. It's not going to be like, hey, guys, we're back again with another consumer phone. It's not going to be like that. But I'd like to see them take another stab at the business market. Would I buy that phone? Who knows? We'll see.
I think there's some stuff they could do, especially with Continuum.
Me too.
That would be very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the HP X3, the Elite X3, the same opportunity exists for Microsoft. And it is the enterprise. It is in these highly managed environments. One of the sticky points there, of course, aside from the obvious stuff like the apps problem and the fact that like a lot of users aren't going to want to, you know, be handed a Windows phone, is that I feel like we've kind of crossed the line already, even in enterprises with this BYOD stuff. I mean, people are kind of calling their shots for what they want in mobile devices. So even if your company is providing you with one and paying for it, those employees expect to have some kind of a choice. And those choices are expected to be iPhone or some kind of Android phone. Huh. And so I still think there's going to be a resistance to this, even in enterprises. But yes, I agree this is the one place where they could probably make this into a business. And I think I had this kind of conversation before around this notion that a poorly selling Windows phone is still pretty good in the scope of the PC industry,
right?
So the number of, you know, the couple of million devices you might sell in the phone industry looks terrible because there's 1.5 billion devices sold every year. But in a market where you're selling 280 million PCs, that's pretty good.
I'll take it.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break. See how much shorter the show is without all the Chromebook stuff?
You know what you could do is post-production, you could probably just
I'll add it in later.
Add some in.
What Paul and Mary Joe won't tell you.
Yep. Nice.
I'll bring the Pawn Stars into recant. Our show today brought to you by our cooking school. I probably don't think that Blue Apron would want you to call it a cooking school, but I have to say that for me, that's one of the great things about Blue Apron is I get a chance to try new stuff. I love to cook, but I'm tired at the end of the day. I don't want to go shopping. I don't want to plan a menu. So I end up eating out, going to fast food restaurants. We got to stop that. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking available to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients. Basically, building a community of home chefs. That could be you. Great stuff for less than $10 a meal. See, so, you know, on Tuesdays I go home, and there on the porch is the Blue Apron box, refrigerated. Three meals are in there. You can get them for couples or for family. They have family-friendly ingredients. You can pick your menu, of course, each week on the Blue Apron site. It's about $10 a meal, a little less, and you get the freshest, highest quality ingredients. Exactly what you need, no more, no less. You know, if you need one cell rib, you get it, you know. So there's no waste. You don't have stuff rotting in the refrigerator. The seafood is sourced sustainably. It's amazing, and it's fresh. The beef is raised humanely, and it's beautiful. The chickens are free-range. The pork is raised naturally. The produce, they're from local farms using regenerative farming practices. It really is good stuff. And you can prepare that meal in less than 40 minutes and feel great about it. The house smells great. Your family comes home and they go, oh, what's for dinner? That smells fantastic. And you feel like, you know, I've been cooking all day, but you haven't. You've been cooking about half an hour, 40 minutes. Blue Apron delivers right to you in about 99% of the United States. And you'll be using ingredients you maybe you've never seen before. In fact, let's go see what's on the menu this week for Blue Apron. Beef tartine with zucchini au pistou. I don't even know what that is, but I got to tell you, when I'm looking at it, it looks really, really good. They even recommend a wine pairing to go along with it. They've got videos on the website, and each Blue Apron box comes with beautifully laminated recipe cards for the meal, so you have the recipe for future. And I tell you, once you cook it, you will be ready. You know, I mean, you'll know how to do it the next time. I just really love, look at that, exactly one tablespoon of capers. No more, no less. You know how many jars, half-used jars of capers I have in my refrigerator? Lisa, when she first met me, she called me the condiment king because I have all of these, like, little things. Because, you know, but look, one clove of garlic, one lemon, everything you need. Oh, that beautiful Pugliese loaf. Let's see what else. Chicken steam buns with French breakfast radish. And cucumber kimchi. You'll be cooking with ingredients you've never used before, but you'll discover such great stuff like crispy cod and cabbage slaw tacos with pepita, pineapple, and avocado salsa. Or pan-seared pork chops with two cheese mashed potatoes and sautéed spinach. And the thing is, you get to choose. You get to choose. So you figure out, oh, I'll have that chicken parmesan and bucatini pasta. I can't wait till next week. Go to blueapron.com/twit. Get your first two meals free, free shipping even. And you could try it. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. blueapron.com/twit. We thank them so much for the support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about windows. Windows this week. Just windows. No, nothing else. I love the roll-up. We even talked about the roll-up yesterday on Security Now. Nice. We referred to your article, Mary Jo.
Nice.
Thank you. This is for Windows 7, right?
Yeah. So this was a big surprise yesterday. Microsoft ended up doing the convenience roll-up of hot fixes, security fixes, and other general core fixes.
Hallelujah.
For Windows 7. They had kind of signaled they were not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So they... I'd say they let common sense and good decisions triumph over politics. The reason they weren't going to do it was because they were trying to get everybody to go Windows 10. So they said, hey, if we make Windows 7 upgrade path a little tough, maybe that'll push more people to Windows 10. Instead, they came out with the convenience roll-up. It goes all the way back to Service Pack 1. They don't want us to call this Service Pack 2, but it kind of is Windows 7 Service Pack 2.
Yep.
For all intents and purposes.
Yep. And you know, this could save you literally days of updating. I mean, if you took a fairly old version of Windows 7 install disk.
Yeah.
Somebody,
the worst part is, you know, it's literally several hundred updates to install.
Yeah.
They don't all install at once.
No.
You have to keep going back, check Windows update again,
reboot,
get them going
reboot,
again.
Check again.
It takes a lot. It's basically a day's of work.
Yeah.
A day of work. Yeah. Yeah.
So, or, you know, somebody in the chat room last week, they said, it took me all week.
Yeah. People say sure. that, yeah. right?
And by the way, in the meantime, you're not kind of protected. You're kind of sitting there on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and you got to resist the temptation to do anything because you haven't got all those updates yet. So this is huge. And I don't know why they resisted this.
I don't either.
They used to do it all the time.
Politics. It's one of those tough things. Like, you want to kind of salute them for doing this, and it's like, but seriously, what took so long?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think there was a lot of a back and forth inside about should they. You know, it made sense for customers, but if they did it, they felt like they were giving people an out for not going to Windows 10. So it kind of went back and forth, back and forth.
In a nutshell, what's wrong with the tech industry today? We could do the best thing for customers, or we could do the thing that customers are going to hate, but it'll help promote our next product. In but a nutshell, and it's not just Microsoft, everybody's doing that now, and I hate it.
They did the right thing this time, so I will give them kudos.
There is also something cultural at Microsoft where the glory is all in new stuff. It's not in making old stuff work better.
Yep.
You know?
That's a big problem at Google, same thing. Yeah. No, you can't get anybody to maintain an existing product. They all want to do the shiny new thing.
I mean, the server, you know, back when we were doing service packs, I mean, this is a tough term to use, but, you know, the service pack team was always kind of like the B team, right? It was like, you know, everyone wanted to work on the main OS to work on the new stuff for the next version.
Right.
You don't want to maintain the old code.
Nobody wants to be the B team.
Well, I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah. So a couple more things to mention about this that people might care about. This also, there's also a convenience roll up for a Server 2008 R2, which is the server counterpart to Windows 7. So that's something that didn't get a lot of play, but that there is a convenience roll up for that as well. And then going forward monthly, Microsoft's going to take non-security updates for Windows 7, 8.1, Windows Server 2008 R2, and Windows Server 2012, and deliver them as a single update once monthly. So that's also really good news that they're going to.
So that will help servicing on Windows 8.1, I guess. But they still aren't doing a roll-up for Windows 8.1. Obviously, it hasn't been around as long, so you don't have as many updates. But you still have, I bet, hundreds of updates to do on a clean install of that OS.
Mm-hmm. How big is
that? I don't know. Maybe it's not worth the effort.
Do you know? I mean, is it massive?
How big? Yeah. No, I haven't seen it yet. That's a good question, but it's still going to be easier to digest than the way it was done before. I don't know. I mean, I would guess also on the Windows 8.1 front that it might be the low user base is
right.
You know, makes it not as big of a deal.
Not as urgent.
That's a case where you know what, everybody's benefited by you moving to Windows 10. If you're still using Windows 8, go to 8.1 and then update to 10 because. That's crazy talk.
I actually agree with that. By the way, because you will hear from these people, there is a subset of people who use Windows 8.1 on a tablet in particular or a 2-in-1 device. And they really like the Edge UIs, which I sort of guess and get. And they're, you know, pushing back on upgrading to Windows 10 for that reason.
I can understand that. And I have that $60 crap tablet.
The place people,
I can't update that either, you know. I
mean, yeah.
Although that's an appliance, so I don't. There's no urgency to put a roll up in there either. It's just
right.
But yeah, I think the reason they really did do this for Windows 7 is who are the people using Windows 7? Who are the biggest constituency of theirs? Big enterprise customers who still are using it. And guess what? They have the right to use it till 2020 because that's when Microsoft is going to keep patching it until. So you want to do right by your customers, and so they did.
Although, if you're really a big enterprise, you create your own slipstreamed Windows 7 with all the updates. You do the, you know, you're making an image.
Well, this makes it a lot easier, and this thing can be slipstreamed. They use a different term, injected.
Injecting,
I think is what
they
said. It's slipstreamed. You know,
that
you can slipstream
bad.
It into it. but it does give you that nice. Kind of thing. I'm going to look at this over the weekend, and I because I'm just curious about how this works. But Microsoft over the years made many attempts to make slipstreaming work better and to have it be a more seamless process, and they never did. I'm curious about this kind of thing because the way slipstreaming worked until you couldn't do slipstreaming anymore was that it would really just install the old version and then upgrade to the new stuff. Like it didn't really integrate it, and maybe the term injecting or you know suggests that it will in fact do it all at once. So I'm just curious to see how that works. So I'll look at that when I have time over the weekend.
Yeah,
that's how I spend my weekends.
Well, at least you take some time off, Paul, and that's the good thing.
That is how I take time off.
You know what? That's me too.
I'm gonna install Windows 7.
that's actually me too. You know?
Yeah.
Lisa says, "All right, we're gonna stop talking about work. We're just gonna enjoy our weekend." I said, great. And I go grab my laptop and start.
I'm going to do what I'm doing all the time.
Yeah, anyway. No, that's why we're good at what we do. We love it. We love it. Wow, there's just a dearth of content here today.
Well, we tried
Did
to
you guys
it,
you want know. Me to talk about Chromebook at all?
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that.
Uh-oh.
Because I feel like we don't talk about that enough.
Uh-oh. Have I mentioned how great it is to use Mutt and Emacs on my Linux box? Have I? Moving.
Maybe.
Leah. have I talked about the Amazon Echo lately? Did you? Okay, you know what? I should mention this Google I.O. thing. Google is kind of moving in, I think, a little bit on Cortana, aren't they? I mean, I feel like the only competitor, Siri's not, Echo's not, for what Google's doing with its machine learning platform is really Cortana.
I never understood how Amazon was able to come up with something as popular as the Echo because they have no particular expertise in this area. And it seems like owning a search engine like Google and Microsoft obviously do would be a huge advantage for this kind of thing. Google, it's odd because their mobile products have always had, you know, they've had this stuff for a while. It's funny how long it's taking them to get into this kind of living room / home market.
Yeah. I kept wondering, is Google in this?
And I'm surprised Microsoft hasn't done it either.
I am too. I wonder if Panos is building something like that.
A Surface device would make a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, mm-hmm. For the home.
I don't think it hurts either. It's hurt Google not to be in this space. It's been, I think, very educational to watch Amazon and what they do and what people like. And it's not going to hurt them in the long run. They're going to have a product that will be competitive.
Yes. By the way, that's absolutely true. I feel like companies move forward and they're doing their thing. And then this little disruption occurs that no one saw coming. Right. You know, the iPhone was a major example of this. Yeah. The Echo is kind of a minor example of this. But Google has obviously been working on this kind of stuff for a long, long time. But to have it come together into a shipping product that has been successful from a company like Amazon must have been very strange for them. But, you know, it kind of re-triggered or rejiggered their kind of strategy for this voice control stuff. I think they're going to get it right. Anyone who's used Google Now on a phone and seeing how that Google type stuff works, understands.
But same with Cortana. I mean, I think Microsoft, I think you nailed it when you said having a search engine back end is kind of a critical piece of this. And Cortana has always interfaced well into third party apps. And and that's the other thing that this is going to do. And
Google has the Android thing to fall back onto.
Right.
Whatever, 1.something billion devices running Android. People are very familiar with this stuff.
That's
true. This will be a very natural.
It will be, because you already know this syntax.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was smart of them to do it.
Microsoft scooped everybody by putting Cortana on the desktop.
Yeah.
And I think probably from Microsoft's point of view, that's sufficient, because their audience is in front of a computer. So
That's their bigger audience
than
mobile. Yeah,
listening. Right.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, if they'd left it just on the phone, it would have been a very small audience of people using it. So they were smart to put it up. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, when you're a hammer, I mean, where are the nails? They're on the PC. Let's go there.
This show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring folks, you got to go to ZipRecruiter, a place to go for the simplest way to hire the right person fast. With ZipRecruiter, you post to 100-plus job boards, a single click of the mouse. Those candidates start rolling in. Then they'll post it on every job board, including all the social networks like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. And the nice thing is all of these employees that are rolling in are not rolling to your inbox. They're not calling your phone. They don't have that information. They go right into the ZipRecruiter interface, where it's very easy to quickly screen and rate and hire the right person fast. The right ones out there, you got to reach out to where they are, and ZipRecruiter makes it easy. Join the 800,000 businesses that use ZipRecruiter. More than 100 million candidate applications delivered. That's nice. And buried in that haystack, there's always a golden needle, that perfect employee waiting for you at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Try it free. All you Windows Weeklies users, we got a deal for you. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Post your job free and get those results. And who knows, by the day after tomorrow, that right person may be right there in your office smiling at you saying, thank God you used ZipRecruiter. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, thank goodness they're here. set me straight on this whole Windows thing.
Leo, all the kids are doing it.
You know, I know. Paul, I played with on Monday. Mm-hmm. We had the we had triangulation. We had the PlayStation VR guy come in, Richard Marks, and he brought the VR, and I played it, and it was awesome.
I'm glad to hear that, because that's the one I'm thinking about.
No, well, sorry, first of all, it's the only one that...
That sounded sarcastic. I meant that I meant that really.
No, it is the one you should get. You know, we have Oculus Rift and Vive. And
yeah, I tried the Vive yesterday, by the way.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say Vive and Oculus Rift seem very, very comparable. I
mean, they
as
are.
Far as just the,
but you know where they're lacking?
The way they work. And
I was surprised because I thought, well, with Steam's partnership, Vive should be killer on games. And did you find a game that was compelling?
Mm-mm.
It's like Tilt Brush, the painting game.
It's all painting.
And
all
Job Simulator. Cartoon. And neither of those.
Job Simulator, that was dumb.
They're not compelling. They're demos, basically.
By the way, that's exactly right.
PlayStation is going to have 50 titles.
Yeah. Yep.
And I played one, which was a demo because it's not done yet, where you're sitting in a car. You've got the visor on, so you're sitting and you're holding the Move, and it has a Kinect-style camera on the top, right, of the PlayStation. So you're in a car now going down the L.A. freeway, and sitting next to you is a guy who looks and sounds just like Jason Statham. And he's going, yeah, you know, these Russian gangsters, they really become a problem. And then all of a sudden... And you're sitting here, you're looking, there's a soda, you sip the soda, there's bullets in the glove compartment. All of a sudden, this car goes right in front of you. He shoots the guy, he goes boom on the windshield, cracks your windshield, and you're just like right in your face.
Yeah.
And he punches out the windshield and says, yeah, have a gun. And now you're shooting Russian gangsters. It's vivid. There's no latency. I'm saying this is going to be awesome.
More cartoonish than realistic?
No.
Because it seems like the type of game that would do well on VR platforms are like those Telltale type games.
Yeah, no. You're going to want this. This is a first-person shooter. Now, you're sitting, and PlayStation, like Oculus, is not a big mover. The Vive, you want to have a big space.
Yeah, the Vive, you want a room.
But people don't have rooms to dedicate to their holodeck. So,
well,
some do.
Some of them do.
And they'll spend $800 on the headset and $1,500 on a PC, and they'll do it. But there's 40 million PlayStation. I've got it. Where is Microsoft in this? This is such an opportunity.
So E3 is in a couple of weeks. I'm not saying they're going to announce anything, but if they are, it's going to be there. If they don't, it's like, guys, you know, it's a lot like this Cortana personal assistant thing. Like, when does this happen for you?
They're going to miss the boat, I'm telling you.
I know.
And it's what it's going to hurt. I love the Xbox One. I don't want to buy a PlayStation 4. I didn't buy a I bought the Xbox One. But I'm going to buy a PlayStation 4 for this.
Sure.
Just for this. The bundle, by the way, if you don't have Move in the camera, is, what did he say, $399. So if you already have a PlayStation 4.
The cameras is the same one as before, the PlayStation camera.
Yeah. So you know, if you already have your camera and Moves, which many PlayStation
users do. Oh, so now there's finally going to be
$299
for the visor. Camera?
Yeah. Yeah, finally, there's something to do. Well, it's like the Kinect. I asked him, is it the same as the Kinect? He said, no, because we don't have the depth. We don't do the depth sensor. We do triangulation. So it's two RGB cameras instead of the infrared plus RGB. It's two RGB cameras. But it worked great. And you lift the Move things, and you see them in the headset. You lift the controller, you see it. The buttons work. You press the triggers, they move in the headset.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sorry, Mary Jo, but...
No, I mean, we know there's going to be some kind of new hardware from Microsoft.
They've said that?
Yeah.
We're pretty sure,
we've heard this, yeah.
Hardware. Yeah.
They haven't said
so
it.
We just don't know what it is.
It could be anything, so.
I mean, I honor their bet on HoloLens, and I think that that's going to be great in a few years.
But they don't have a cardboard type thing.
Right. I think the neat thing about
VR is just... I have my own new cardboard.
Yeah, that range.
I mean. Drink craft beer. Yeah. You know, it's nice about those bumper stickers. They hold it together, too. Have you been playing with it?
I have. You know, I got it through the New York Times. They're mailing them to every subscriber.
I got one, too. Yeah.
I know. So I was like, hey, let me try it.
Yeah. Actually, I have mine here.
They're trying to do, they want to do a lot of new stuff. It came in my Sunday Times. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
And they want to do, you know, they had the refugees in immersive video. Mm-hmm. And, but that's just the beginning. I mean, this is kind of the simplest version.
Yeah, so I mean, you can look at a still photo, and it's cool, you know. But the immersive video stuff can be really neat. I did a thing this morning. I didn't do it. I watched a video this morning of a guy surfing, and you go on. You know, the waves are kind of curling over you, and you can turn in 360 degrees. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Well, okay. I mean, I'm going to get email now. Well, this is a Windows show. But you got to look at Microsoft does not exist in a vacuum. And you got to look at the landscape.
Well, unfortunately, they kind of do. Which is
well, you know what it is about vacuums? They suck.
Yep. Nope. Sure do.
We need to talk about wherever Microsoft services run, we have to talk about it.
Right. And you know, it is true that both the Oculus and the Vive require Windows 10.
Right.
So that'll sell a few PCs and some Windows 10. I bought a copy of Windows 10, and of course, I didn't get
it for
free.
That's why the PlayStation thing is very interesting, because right now, if you want a high-quality VR experience, you do need a very expensive Windows PC. Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive both require that. But this PlayStation VR thing,
you already have
a different animal. I mean, so if this thing actually works on a shipping PlayStation...
It does.
Or, right, which you're saying it does.
Yep.
This is a very inexpensive way to get a high-quality VR experience.
$299.
So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, that's a good deal.
And with all the games that they're going to have.
Right.
You know, it's a little, you know, it's too bad. You're doing only a little movement. You're mostly sitting down. But I think for your introduction to this.
Leo, that's exactly how I play games right now. So that's perfect.
You kind of want that. You don't get seasick. You don't get car sick. You're sitting in a car. So there was no latency. It was 1080p.
Sure.
It was and it was a vivid 3D first-person shooter with no compromising graphics, and it was fun. You know what it was? It was Duck Hunt on the 405 with Russians instead of ducks.
Yep,
it was fun. I didn't want to stop. And he actually said, "Well, because the demo ends, right?" And he said, "We had to do that because we could never get couldn't get people off."
Right.
They wouldn't stop playing unless it ended after 5 minutes. I know what he meant. All right. That's enough of an interlude. Let's move on to Windows 10, ladies and gentlemen. There's a mobile build. I don't have to.
Jeez, he's like, oh,
again.
You don't have to do anything right now.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, a week ago, Microsoft released this build for PCs, right? 14.3.42.
Right.
This week, they released it for mobile. I'm curious. Mary Jo and I never spoke about this, so I'm curious what she thinks about this. They changed the version number, right? So the build is described as 14.3.42, but actually the build number is actually 1001.
Isn't that a mistake, though?
They said it was a bug. Oh, he did. Okay. But I think it's a more accurate.
They did. Yeah. They said this is a bug. It's showing up as 1001.
Because it's really the 1001th build of this OS since they were working on Windows 10 Mobile, I think. I think that's what it really is.
Have you been counting?
I know.
They always put the minor version number. So, for example, if it was listed correctly, the build number would be 10.0.14342.1001. Mm-hmm. That's really the build number. It's 1001. I don't know. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting because 10.0.0.1001 is... actually kind of an easier way of saying it.
It is.
Anyway,
Gabe said it was a bug that it displayed that name that way. But maybe it says something about how they're going to go forward with it. I don't know.
I think simplifying it would be great, but it sounds
like that's something. It's super hard to keep track. I know people say it's not that hard, but it is pretty hard.
I think it's hard. Of course, I can keep track of three different things at one time. They added three new devices to the list of devices that can receive this update, right? So the Lumia Icon and then two blue Win devices. If you paid attention to the new features that came on the PC last week, there were three new features. They're all the same from... the PC build, swipe navigation, Microsoft Edge, which used to be a feature of Mobile IE, the underlying ability, but not any actual example of the ability of a website URL to open an app, right, instead of going to a website, and then some improvements to the feedback hub. So nothing major, but, you know, setting the stage for...
They're also getting rid of the same Wi-Fi Wi-Fi Sense feature that they got rid of.
That's right.
In the PC
build. That's a super controversial feature.
Right.
Well, we talked about that last week, but yeah.
Nothing controversial.
Nothing controversial.
But people hated it, so it's out.
Yeah. Did you look in the drawer to see if your icon updated itself?
I did not. You know, I think to get this, I'd have to first become
an insider on
my phone. Yeah. Then I'd have to, do all the jump through hoop things. And everyone says it's not hard. I know,
It's not hard. But here's the problem. It's not hard. But once you get into that ring, you're stuck there. You can't just leave. You're going to get new builds.
Oh, that's the phone thing, right?
I think it might be a PC thing too, isn't it? I don't remember.
You have to roll back the way, don't you, to get out of the loop? Yeah.
I turned off.
Yeah, I mean, once you're on that track, you can't get out until it coincides with a public release. So if in July, the final version of this thing shipped, of the whatever we're calling it, the anniversary update, at that point, I think you could unenroll, and then you'd stay on the shipping, the public track or the production track or whatever it's called.
Right.
Like I said, I can't keep track of it. I think that's the case.
Yeah.
I do. I think it is.
The nice thing about the internet is if that's not the case, I'll hear about it in 10 seconds.
You will hear soon, like now.
I'm watching the chat room.
Yep.
It's easier to opt out of GWX, really?
A spec easier. I wouldn't say a lot easier. And you know what's funny? So we talked about this on Windows Weekly way back in the beginning of March because I looked it up. We
had
talked
a screenshot
about how
of this in the show notes.
I know. So we found some people who said, hey, did you see Microsoft is changing?
That's what I thought, too.
Yes. Right.
So yesterday, Steve said, look at the new screenshot. I said, that looks pretty much like the
one Raphael posted.
So is it new or is it not?
So here's what I think happened. I think we found some people who were getting this new screen kind of like as a test.
Oh.
And they told us, hey, look at this screen I'm getting. It says a date and a time, and it has a thing, click here to opt out.
Right.
And we didn't know that wasn't going to everyone, but obviously it was not. And I think as of last week, now everybody is seeing it who's getting it.
But the thing is, CNET and Tom's Hardware and a bunch of other places wrote posts like, oh, Microsoft completely changed this. They're finally listening to feedback. And it's like, guys, this is the thing they announced last October. In January, they said what the date was going to be. In February 1st, they started implementing it. And then in March 1st, it was like it went to recommended update and Windows update. We were like, this has been kind of telegraphed all along. And it's been happening for months. But I guess it's new to some people, like you said.
Yeah. And the good part is before, what you used to see is when the prompt came up, you'd see upgrade now or upgrade tonight. And you had to know to click on the red X to get rid of that completely.
Well, now you see upgrade now and okay.
Right. Well, now you see upgrade now, okay, and then in small type, click here to change the schedule or cancel your scheduled update.
See,
at least
my wife didn't see any of that because she grabbed the top of that window and she dragged it down so it was behind the taskbar.
What happens if you click the X? Does that also cancel it? Or does it just pop up again later?
I believe it does.
Actually, I wouldn't take that bet.
Just click, click here where it says click here, click here.
If you click there, it says change your schedule or cancel your upgrade.
Yeah.
Go there.
That's probably a good idea. This looks just like the one Raphael showed.
That we saw.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is socially engineered, right? Giant okay button.
Right.
Lots of green check marks to guide you to that giant
button.
Well,
normally it'd say okay cancel. But instead of okay cancel, it says okay upgrade now.
I know, it's hilarious. It's awesome. So when you click cancel, you're actually making it happen sooner.
Yeah, faster.
Yeah.
No, that's what I mean. It's designed to fool you.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I want to see coming out of Microsoft.
I'm sorry.
That
just frosts me.
It's almost
over, guys. It's almost July 29th.
I don't believe it for a moment.
This is going to go away.
Come on. Is it really?
It is.
Come on.
Yeah. The Get Windows 10 app is going to go away.
I love this. We should have this week in Do We Think the Get Windows 10 ad is going to go away. It could be at least a feature of the site for the next 6 months or whatever.
It could.
It just depends, I guess, where, I don't think Microsoft knows. You know, I think that, you know, Chris Cappicella is going to go to the the team. What do they call it? The big meeting, and they're going to debate it. And then somebody's going to come in and say, you know, we really just ought to just kind of keep doing this.
Yeah, I think they already know, but
that would be my vote. But,
That they know that they've really decided.
No, that they should just keep it. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah. What is the cost to them of not doing it? I mean,
not a whole lot.
Not a lot. No, who buys Windows?
No one, but except enterprises, obviously.
But anybody who is going to, well, and they don't get it for free anyway.
Right, they don't get it for free. So.
And anybody who is going to buy it has said by now, oh, gosh, let's get it for free. So it's only like, who? So July 30th comes along, and what, there's some doofus says, oh, I hear there's a new version of Windows. Let me go get that.
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
There will be those people.
Blister pack of these things.
But how much revenue? We're talking $100,000? I mean, seriously.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
There's no I don't think you could say there's revenue loss unless I'm really missing something.
No, I don't think it's a big revenue thing. I think like I said last week, I think it's more a this whole way we've been pushing this has been really unpopular, and we've gotten the maximum value
now.
Out of it. So let's get rid of it.
I guess they can't. They promised a year.
July 29th.
But you know what? That's not what's unpopular. In fact, I would suggest that's extremely popular. What's unpopular is
the way
is turning us into foie gras geese.
I know.
Here's your Windows 10. Eat it. Your liver's gonna go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Again, with a Leo with a Windows hate, the guy is just
not a good image for a vegetarian. But let's...
Don't you feel like a goose?
I've avoided getting the prompt after that one time when I had almost automatically install.
Never 10. I forgot to tell us. Oh, no, I think I did tell Steve you used Never 10.
Yeah, I'm using Never 10 or
whatever.
Never 10.
Steve Gibson's Never 10 app. And by the way, he was also being slammed because people thought he hated Windows. And again, it was just me. But he said, no, I love Windows. He said it. I love Windows. He did call it Windows 10 a turd, but
then he followed it up by the word 2000.
Yeah, I mean that's the problem. He loves
XP.
No, I think he's 7. I think he's gone Windows. All 7. He was going all 7. That's the plan. And Windows 7, you know what? No one will argue that Windows 7 is a great version of Windows. The one Mary Jo uses
on my main machine. Although I do use Windows 10 on my laptop.
Yeah. Well, you have to use it somewhere.
I do.
And I don't think we're even saying Windows 10 is a bad thing. I think it's perfectly fine. Right. I'm not crazy about the ads for stuff that's going to be. They're doubling the number of ads, right, in my start menu.
No.
Is that wrong?
You can turn those things off.
You can.
I mean, they're recommended app.
So I could turn that off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I already have because I don't see them.
Even the iPhone has an option like that in the OS.
Yeah. Don't recommend apps in my start menu. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. Yep.
Luckily, you can just shut it off.
As long as you can shut it off, I have no problem with it.
Yep. I don't see any. I
must have shut it off. Is that personalization? I think you told me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's in settings.
It's in personalization in the...
It's in... Whatever.
Occasionally show suggestions in start. It's so you know, Windows key I, and then you go to personalization, and then it's in the start menu section of that. And at least now I'm on an insider, so that's probably not necessarily what everybody sees. But
no, it's just
it's turned on.
It's in the same location.
So I could say show more tiles. I do want that. Occasionally show suggestions and start. I don't want that. Show most used apps. I do want that. Show recently added apps. I do want that. Use start full screen. I definitely don't want that. Show recently opened items and jump lists. Yeah. So there you go. I actually had it turned on and I wasn't seeing anything. So there, you know. But I understand there's an update that's going to put more Candy Crush Saga in your start menu. So what could possibly be wrong with that?
But luckily, you can turn those off too.
You know, and I like Windows 10. I have nothing against Windows 10. It's just how they've foisted on people.
Right. You know, the idea is to try to expose more people to what's available in the store because a lot of people never go to the store. And I get that. And it's great for developers that they're doing that. But it's you need to have an out for people who don't want it.
Now, I have been saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, I thought I got it from you. If you don't want Windows 10, but you still want to have the free deal past July 29th, install it and then roll back.
Yep.
And now you've activated on that machine, and that machine has an entitlement to Windows 10. And anytime you then later want to go to Windows 10, you can. So that would be the this would be the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And make a backup before you do it, because sometimes the rollback doesn't work.
You know, for a Chromebook user, Leo, you have some pretty good
information. He actually knows something about Windows.
Now, how do I power wash this? Oh, that's something. Actually, they do
PC
have
reset.
You know, what? Restore is a power wash. They actually even have that in here. Yep. So there you go. Why am I using Chrome OS? I'm insane. Actually, I don't use it as my main operating system. I'm not actually, I'm just telling. There's a lot of people who probably should be using it. Not me.
I don't think we need to revisit this topic, but
no.
I'm a masochist. What can I say? That won't happen until the anniversary update, which is the July 29th update?
Yeah.
Okay.
Around thereabouts. Maybe not exactly on July 29th.
Yeah, they wanted wiggle room. In fact, you know, it was funny. Yeah. I saw there was a post today. This is some Microsoft slide from something, and it says July 29th, and it's like, there's a date.
Yeah.
You know, but when we talked to Terry when they announced the name, he said, look, you know, we don't intend to ship it on that day. It's wiggle room. So 30 days plus or minus, who knows? We'll do it. You know, we'll ship it when we can ship it. It has to meet some quality bar, obviously.
Yeah. And there's probably RTM, although it's not politically correct to call it that anymore, but RTM versus when it goes out to everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Right, that's true.
The update that we have as the insiders ring is that close, do you think, to the final?
Getting close,
pretty
right?
Close,
because
imagine,
it's
right,
May
we're
now.
Not that far away from July, right? I mean, in the old days, you needed X amount of weeks, you know, and I don't know how they do it now. It's obviously a much quicker process, but I would be really surprised as we head into June to see major new anniversary update features start popping up. I mean, I think we're kind of getting there, don't you, as far as what it's going to be?
Right. The one feature that I'm kind of curious when this rolls out, and it's not really inside the operating system, is that Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection Service, because they opened the beta of that more broadly this week, but they were very weird about talking about the timing of when that would come out. Like, they didn't say it's coming out with the anniversary update. They kind of said it'll come out when
reasonably
it's ready.
Sure, that was the fall. I thought it was the fall.
I had heard Q3, so that would be slightly after the.
And since my memory is obviously perfect, it must be that. what I have in my head.
Yeah, but that's not really part. I mean, I guess it is. It's a feature for enterprise, that may not be available at the exact time when.
I don't think of it as a feature. I think of it as almost like a perk. You know, it's a cloud service basically that, you know, requires certain licensing and certain Windows, probably enterprise on the client. So,
Are you guys familiar with Amazon Workspaces?
A little bit.
No. Is this the virtualization thing?
Yeah. I just read a blog post about it. A guy it's thin client stuff, just singing his. Yeah. He says I love my Amazon workspace. Oh well, wait a minute. He works for Amazon, so that probably isn't the best guy to ask. I just realized this is but what's interesting is you basically could use a very thin client and have a Windows environment.
I'm not a big fan of the Windows environment thing virtual. Right, I actually think the app delivery is the big deal. And I think we talked about this a week or two ago, this notion that Microsoft and third parties could deliver virtualized applications down to, you know, Macs or Windows thin clients or Windows mobile clients or Linux or the C word or whatever, Android, you know.
By the way, this would work on anything, you know, including a Chromebook.
I mean, you need to have some kind of a client app, obviously, that can handle it, because it's not the same as a remote. And, you know, desktop. Well, it's pretty
affordable too. I mean, we're talking around $30 a month, I think, for a full Windows install. You can have Office on it. And the thing is, you log out at home and you go to work, and then you fire it up there, and it's the same workspace everywhere. I think it's I don't know.
So
I've never used
it.
So.
Great, you know, connectivity and
yeah,
all that kind of
you
stuff.
Have to have a lot of bandwidth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is the theory behind Continuum on Windows Mobile, right?
But this one's purely on a thin client. I mean, this is like, you know, you don't even need a PC.
Right, of course. But I mean, you know, with a Windows 10 mobile device, you at least have this phone you can use kind of out in the world as a phone, and you have local storage and all that kind of stuff. And if you can run the couple of desktop apps you need when you're docked to whatever with a keyboard and a mouse and a big screen, it sort of turns into a PC. I mean, it seems like there's a solution in there somewhere.
Well, remember, I don't know if you remember the last fall, Microsoft dropped this little tantalizing tidbit where they said, you know what, we're going to have a way for Windows 10 to run on Azure coming up.
Yeah.
And then they never said more about
it. This would be that, except it's not on Azure. In fact, they don't do this. It's kind of weird.
Right now, they let you run Windows on Azure, but only for test purposes.
Right.
Like you can run it in a Windows 7 or 8.1 in a virtual machine on Azure, but you can't use it as your production environment. So last fall, they said, hey, we're working on a way to get Windows 10 on Azure, and we're going to have some kind of a new license around that. And since October, we've heard nothing about that.
I mean, this is clearly for enterprise. I mean, no home user would want this, but I could see the value of it for enterprise. You know, for like $50 a month, you get a managed Windows.
I can see schools wanting to do it.
Schools,
I mean,
that's another good use for it. Yeah.
I don't know. I actually think there could be consumer applications for this type of thing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it could give you ways to even run. Like, remember when they were talking about streaming games and then there were different ways?
Like, it's like renting software. Like, I need Photoshop twice a month for some reason, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Conceivably, you could do that kind of thing. Just pay, you know, I have $10. I pay $10 and I have access to Photoshop today. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, PCs are cheap, so I don't know if it would save you money. I think the selling point is that it's managed rather than saving you money.
So there's a couple of things. I mean, well, this presumes to a future where maybe more and more people are using simpler mobile platforms than Windows, but also instances where you have maybe an older PC and you can't necessarily do this kind of thing, or just don't own that software, you know, whatever it might be.
Be nice. They charge by the month. It'd be really nice if they charge by CPU, like the old days of mainframes where they charge you for usage. Somebody will do that.
Well, that's kind of the Azure way, too. So, it could work.
Let's see here. Some more news about the OneDrive app for Windows 10. Well, I thought we talked about this last week. Is there more to say? Paul still hates it?
Since last week, they've actually come out with a universal app.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's an improvement.
This is your story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. This was something they announced they were going to do during their SharePoint event. They said, hey, we're going to build this UWP version of OneDrive for Windows 10. And they just kind of rolled it out casually with very little fanfare a couple nights ago. Later evening, our time. Immediately, some people were like, is this placeholders? Is this like what placeholders is going to be? Like the replacement for placeholders? But it's not, Paul was telling me it's not really, right?
No, it's just a mobile app. It's the same thing you get on iOS, Android. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to have. I mean, if you're online, I mean, so the file system integration, obviously, if you have a lot of stuff in OneDrive, you only sync some of it. It's still handy in a more elegant environment than a web browser to be able to navigate around OneDrive and access all of your files, not just the stuff you're syncing. You can look at photo slideshows and play videos, you know, streaming them over the web or over the internet, I guess.
You can share photos this way, right, without downloading them.
Yep. I like that. That's good.
Yep. I like that.
I thought they were for some reason abandoning the photo thing with OneDrive. They're not.
No, they used to have a promo for people who use the photo backup capabilities of OneDrive where you got additional storage, and they've gotten rid of that, although I think they grandfathered in the people who did it. But you can still, you know, like any other service like this, Dropbox does this, Google Drive does it, Amazon does it, Google Photos does it. You know, you can automatically backup your photos from the phone to whatever service or services you like to use. So it still does do that.
I like the way it looks more than the other OneDrive app that we had.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more intuitive the way it's laid out. I, like it just, for me, it makes more sense. Yeah.
Yeah,
but, and you can have multiple accounts. As far as being placeholder, it's not a placeholder replacement, but I think you and a few others have said this might be what they're calling the placeholder replacement.
It might be. I hope it's not. But yes, I mean.
I know.
It does give you access to everything, and that's all they ever promised.
Yeah. I asked them, is this the placeholder replacement? And they said, well, we never said that's what it was. That was all they would say.
Why would you think that, Mary Jo?
I know. Yes. Why would I?
Somebody stopped by, and I don't know how I'm going to get this to you. I have beer for you guys.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm just going to hold on to it, and apparently this is the kind of beer that can age.
Oh, good.
Excellent.
From Edelbart's Brewery in Austin, Texas. I've got, they're Belgians. This is a quadruple.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Flying Monks. Handcrafted Belgian style quadruple. And sounds then Scratch and Hippo, which is a Bière de Garde. I already drank the Saison. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But,
that one probably wouldn't age as well. The
right. My thinking exactly.
You're so nice, Leo.
It might have been
okay, but you never know.
I'll put this in my beer cellar, and the next time I see you guys, I can't remember his name. Shoot, what was his name? Nice couple from Dallas, but they stopped in Austin on the way.
That's very nice.
Yeah, cool. Were they from Dallas? I think so. Yeah. Anyway, they know who they are. Thank you. Let's take a break, and it's time for the back of the book, including more beer and tips and picks and enterprise code names and all that jazz. But first, let's talk about shaving. A subject, what are you laughing at? Near and dear to my heart.
For men.
Well, no, you know, everyone shaves. I must confess, my wife uses my Harry's. In fact, we ended up getting more Harry's, lots of Harry's. I've got Harry's all over the house. Seriously, every bathroom has its own. Because, first of all, it's affordable. I'm getting the blades sent to me anyway. And so when we have house guests or whatever, there's a nice fresh razor in there from Harry's. This is the Harry's Kids. Very affordable. I think this is a Truman. Let me see. Yeah. So the Truman's $15. And with it, you get the Harry's handle. And these new, they've redesigned these. The soft grip now. Really nice. Grippy. You could use these in the shower and there'd be no slippage. And so you get the handle, you get three blades, this is for $15, for three blades, and I mean, and not a sample size, but a full size Harry's foaming shave gel, or the cream, which is normally what I use is the Harry's cream, full size, not a trial size. You also get the Harry's travel cover, all of that in the kit. I'm going to save you even more. But once you do that, you're going to be in, you're now in the world of Harry's, where you'll get shave cream and razor blades in the mail as needed. You tell them how often you shave. They automatically handle that for you. Delivered right to you. No more going to the drugstore and being treated like a criminal. Having to get the cashier to unlock the plexiglass box so that you can get the precious blades. I understand when they cost that much, you want to lock them up. What is it, like $4 a blade? And you get the Gillette Fusion. It's ridiculous. I remember I had a $32. I was going to buy some blades. And they said $32. I said, not today. Thank you very much. That's why I love Harry's. High quality, high performance blades made in Germany in Harry's own factory. It's sold direct to you. 1 million guys have made the switch to Harry's. You should too. It takes you less than 30 seconds to get in there. Go to harrys.com/windows. They'll know you heard about it on the show. And they'll give you $5 off your first purchase. That makes that Truman kit, the starter kit, with three blades, the handle, the cover, the shave gel, $10. $10. You got to do this. Harry's. And if you don't like it, cancel, you're done. But you will, I think. Harry's.com/windows. A great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. The ad duplex. No, I guess we'll start with the tip of the week. Then the ad duplex app of the week.
This could have been a part of the normal segment because I actually kind of want to go into this a little bit. But
please do.
You may recall. Oh, I should say before I get started, Phil Casper is the person who gave us those beers.
Oh, did he just tweet you or something?
Yeah, he tweeted us.
Thank you, Phil. I'm so sorry I forgot your name. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, no, thank you very much.
It's very nice of him. And I bet he thought I wouldn't give them to you. I
think that's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah, he thought, oh, yeah, Leo's going to drink these all and tell them about it. But no, I've got them right here. Thank you, Phil.
So,
that's nice of you.
Yeah, thank you.
The Saison was amazing. It was really good.
Last December, I did a focus group study for Microsoft, and it's the second time I've done this for the Signature Group, and we brought in a bunch of really normal people to the Dedham Hilton, because that is, of course, the center of technology on the East Coast, and we had them test Signature PCs versus a standard PC of the same type side by side, and we had about 86, I think it was 80, somewhere 84, 86 people in over the course of two long days, the terrible weekend. And, I did what I did the last time. I wrote a white paper for Microsoft. I ended up going out to Microsoft and presenting the findings, actually. And that didn't happen until a couple of weeks ago because of scheduling issues throughout the spring. But it finally did happen. So now I can finally talk about it. And, the tip, as such as it is, you know, that if you're buying a computer, if you're buying a PC, you should look at buying a Signature PC. And I think that listening to this podcast, understand why that's so, right? That Microsoft provides this really clean image of the operating system and just the drivers and utilities that are necessary, not all the additional crapware. The study that we did, again, with perfectly normal people for the most part, non-technical users, over 90% of them obviously preferred Signature over the stock PC configuration and all that kind of stuff. So that, I think that stuff's obvious to everyone listening to this. But the thing is, we talked about Chromebooks last week and people were freaking out about that. I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago about Android and iOS and how now they have these devices that are like two-in-one computers and these things are improving and this has the chance to be like an extinction moment for the PC industry. We know that PC sales are going down and have been for several years. And it's this big, awful, kind of wrenching kind of thing. But, the thing is, in this world, this is where Signature PC matters the most. Because I think that the crapware that PC makers add to their computers, because they get this little vig from antivirus vendors in particular, who are overly aggressive in trying to get people to upgrade, is what's ruining the PC experience. 15 months ago or 16 months ago when I started Therat.com, one of the first big articles I wrote for this new site was my Sorry Satya article, because remember Satya Nadella at the January event in 2015 said that he didn't want people just to need Windows. He wanted people to love Windows 10. And my argument at that time was, people cannot love Windows 10 unless you put a stop to this practice, unless you stop letting PC makers ruining the experience right before the Windows goes out the door to customers.
Right. I agree.
I feel so strongly about this.
Yeah, I agree.
And to me, Signature is like Audible. It's an ad, I guess, in some ways, right? But it's something that I actually really feel strongly about, which is why I'm so okay with it.
Do they charge more? I mean, because they're losing some of the money they'd make from McAfee and others for these Trailwire things, right?
No, the PCs are the same cost.
They're the same.
Yeah.
Although I would guess that means there's less profit, right? I mean, so I'm looking. Here's why I'm asking. I bought that HP Spectre.
I think Microsoft takes the hit.
They take the hit.
I don't think.
Interesting. Yeah. I bought the HP Spectre, and it's not got a lot of crapware on it. It's got the McAfee on it. It's got Computrace's Low Jack on it, and it's got a trial version of Office. Now I already own Office, so
sure.
I presume I can just uninstall these. But would I be better off just getting a Windows ISO and wiping the drive? And Wouldn't that make it a Signature PC?
Not exactly. So this is one of the really interesting issues, because one of the things I did after writing that article last year was write a series of articles about clean PCs. This is something I talked and wrote about a lot, especially last year. It's something, because obviously we have PCs. We bought PCs. We had to buy a PC or did buy a PC for some other place, and it wasn't that Signature image. There are sort of levels that you can go through of reliability over time. And the thing about the Signature PC, and I should say, HP is an interesting company to highlight, because actually HP on certain models does a very good job of not having a lot of crapware on their PCs. There's still some, McAfee, like you pointed out. Remember last week, I couldn't get my Intel NUC to display video without it freezing, and I had to use a different computer. Since then, I've wiped out that install, and I've gone back and redone everything, and it's working today. I'm on the NUC again.
Yeah.
So you could make this argument, well, you've done a clean install of Windows. You've achieved what you're looking for. This thing will work reliably over time. The problem is that's not actually the case. And that over time, what's going to happen is the Intel drivers that cause the problems that I experience might actually make their way into Windows Update. Or maybe to put it a different way, if I were to use Intel's own updater, which I did, that's how I get those things injected onto my computer. So if you do a clean install of Windows on this hardware, you will achieve a cleaner install of Windows. There's no doubt about that. But over time, that might still be subverted.
Oh, man.
Just by you, by mistake, by HP. I mean, you might reach this point where you say, well, I'm going to use the HP install utility.
Yeah, then it'll install that crap on it.
The signature configurations are interesting because Microsoft doesn't always take... And by the way, HP does a little bit of this work, too. I want to be really clear about that. They actually do a pretty good job of this on some computers.
I wouldn't have ordered it if it had the level of crap where HP used to put on there. This is not bad. I can install...
HP is one of the... HP has kind of gotten the message. I mean, yeah. I think there are business realities, which is what drives the McAfee stuff in particular. I do think there's a really... It's almost a hubris thing. A misguided attempt to... try to give consumers a better experience. They believe they're doing that. And it's
CompuTrack, LoJack for sure. I mean, that's probably considered a premium value add. A Windows Office trial, I think people expect that.
You know what?
So the only one thing I don't want is the McAfee, and I can uninstall that, I'm sure.
And you can uninstall it. So by the way, taking the third level down from what we just described, we described the top two levels, signature and then clean install on your own. The third level down is to take it as it comes from the PC maker and to remove things from it. There was this woman, in fact, she lives right down the street from here. It's funny. She's a Mac user too. One of the people who participated in the study said, I would rather add stuff to my computer than take it off. And that's actually really smart and in ways that I don't think she even understood because McAfee, I'm not 100% sure, but there are certain things, and certainly I should say Windows Universal Apps don't fall into this category, but there are things you can remove from a computer that actually don't fully remove or don't remove properly. And those things will impact the reliability of the system over time as well, or could impact the reliability over time. One of the things that the signature guys do that is very effective, and I don't know if they promote this on their website or not, but they should, is they'll put a stock PC configuration as supplied by the PC maker side by side with the signature PC, and then they just let them run. And they do time-lapse videos. And on the stock PC configuration, you'll get occasional pop-ups. You know, Windows has to reboot because we installed updates from time to time. The other thing is like a kaleidoscope, crazy stuff popping up. And some of them are truly insane. And some of them crash over time. They literally crash Windows. There's so much activity of crapware.
Well, that's why I want to do a clean install, because those are the three programs they tell you they're giving you. But I'm sure there's an HP updater running in the background there.
Yeah.
Who knows what's on there? So would you recommend against me just taking a Windows ISO and blasting it on there?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I in all cases, it pays to have backups. You should back up the stock HP.
I'll make it stock a backup, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, do all that stuff. It's worth trying. It may not be necessary. And in this, actually, in the case of HP, they do typically a very good job.
Well, I'll let you know. I get it Monday, by the way. I'll have it for next week.
I feel like Signature is also heavily aimed at normal users, too. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone benefits from it, but especially people who are not savvy enough to know how to take all this stuff off
their PCs.
I can
clean it up.
Right.
And those are the people, by the way, who don't even know this thing exists. And this was the biggest disappointment for me, because we did a study like this 5 years ago. Wasn't surprised. A lot of people hadn't heard about it. 5 years go by. None of the normal people had heard about it. A lot of the technical guys had, of course. But you walk into a Microsoft store, which I did when I was out in Bellevue a couple weeks ago, and Surface is called out as Surface. Signature PCs, which is the only kind of PC they sell, is called out as Laptop. If you look at the signage.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. And that's really disappointing. I also think they should take the extra step and say, by the way, we sell this thing called Surface, and it's really expensive. Surface is a signature PC experience by definition.
Right.
They never say that.
I have no crapware on my Surface Book. They're,
exactly.
Yeah.
It is a signature PC experience.
Right.
So here's the thing. Not everyone can afford a Surface. That's okay. We have these other signature PCs, and these things run the gamut from probably $200 all the way up to $2,000. So there's a
huge Acer S7 was one.
Yeah, it was a signature PC. Yep. I bought the very first signature PC that was ever sold from the Microsoft store in Boston back in 2012, and I still have it. And when you reset that thing, and it comes up, and it's Windows 7 too, by the way, when you reset that thing back to its original, you know, signature image, which is what does happen, it's just like this calming sense of like, ah, you know, because there's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's just, it's really nicely done. So my tip basically is, you know, obviously the people listening to this understand this already. You should recommend this to other people. And we should collectively impress upon Microsoft how important it is to better communicate that this thing exists and that people, especially normal people, like you said, mainstream computer users, are the target market. They should be buying these kinds of computers.
I agree with you.
This is, you know, when you talked about Chromebook or when we talk about things like the Mac on the high end, these are systems that have kind of a cleaner, more
they are
reliable.
Signature PCs, really. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
Apple doesn't put trial wear on
it. This thing can exist on the PC side. It does exist. Microsoft makes it. It's just that so few people know about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but I really, really, really feel strongly about Signature. And I'll have my, I will have a post up about this probably today, actually.
Somebody's saying install LTSB. Now, I would have to buy that, right? The long-term service branch.
Can I get that
standalone?
Pretty different. No, you have to be an enterprise to get that. Plus, right. It means you're not going to get any new features for quite some time.
Oh, it's like the super stable, never update version.
It is. It's like for mission critical systems where you don't want it being upset.
I mean, we probably have a seat or two extra here. I mean, I'm sure we're running LTSB on the...
But how would you get Candy Crush, Leo?
Good point, Paul. Better yet, I want Candy Crush soda when it.
By the way, that was one of the other things that came out in the study. Very interesting. There was a couple of things on the dissenting side were actually complaints about Windows 10. One of them was that Windows Defender, which is the thing that they use for security on signature PCs, was too quiet. And it absolutely is. Remember when Microsoft had something called OneCare, and they actually used this system with their small business server products or their Windows, maybe even Windows Home Server. They had this notion of the green badge of health. So you had this little green badge down in the tray, which meant that your system was protected. And if you needed to update, you know the signatures or whatever, it would turn yellow. Or if there was a threat, it would turn red. And it was because of the colors, it kind of really grabbed you. And if you look at Windows 10 today, when Defender's running in the background, but you have no way of even knowing it's doing anything. It could be protecting you against threats, and you just have no idea. So it's almost too quiet. And on the flip side, Windows 10 comes with crapware, which is crazy. And it's not dangerous crapware, but it's these apps like Candy Crush or 3D Builder or Get Office, even though you already have Office, or Get Skype. And there's all this like kind of just junk that's in the start menu. It was interesting when people kind of complained about that stuff. Obviously, it's worse on the OEM, you know, PC maker side. But even on the signature PCs, because Microsoft does just throw in a bunch of crap now for whatever reason, a lot of people actually complained about that as well.
Well, there's your tip. Buy a signature PC,
please,
friends.
Okay. That was
practically a Chromebook. And then...
Yes. It's right. Almost as good as a Chromebook. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And there's more. There's more. Get a gamertag, baby.
There's a lot of tippage here today. So Microsoft announced this week they were going to release almost 1 million legacy gamertags, Xbox Live Gold gamertags. For the first time in over 10 years, these are gamer tags that people had back in the original Xbox days. Oh. They never upgraded to an Xbox 360, never used the gamer tag again, and now they're making them all available again. And that starts today. So you can do this on the Xbox One console, and you can do it on the web. You can't do it from an Xbox 360, apparently. And so if you're using some awful name that you didn't want and you want to, you know, hopefully there'll be some simpler name that had been kind of, you know, held for whatever reason for many years. They're opening that stuff up
can
again.
I just edit my gamer tag and I can do it.
Yeah. Yep. Just as a side tip. And then as far as the app picks, I got a couple of those too. So the Ad Duplex mobile app pick of the week is Instagram for Windows 10 Mobile. That was released this week. Facebook had announced that they were going to be doing this maybe a few weeks back, and that actually came out earlier this week. I don't remember what day. It was Monday or something. But You know this, Leo. I'm sure, you know, Instagram just redid their icon and logo. And there's been a little controversy around that. We don't have icon. Well, actually, we kind of do have icons. But we didn't get the new icon on Windows 10 Mobile for whatever reason.
You lucky. But, you lucky.
I know. We got a transparent tile, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't actually use Instagram. So what I do know about this is that it's only available on mobile. It's not available on the PC side. I'm actually a little confused by that. But it's available now if you want to take advantage of that. Also, Microsoft Health, which is the companion app for the Microsoft Band, has been available for some time on Windows Phone and has been available as a universal Windows app. Universal Windows platform app on phone is now available on PC as well. It's not 100% there. You can't connect with Bluetooth to the band, but you can if you connect the band via USB to your PC. You can actually sync it that way now. So that's available. And then the final one is Doom, which shipped, I think, late last week, right, on PC and on Xbox One. And I've been playing it on Xbox One.
I've been real tempted, but I've been waiting to hear your review.
I don't like it. And in fact, I have actually played it every day a bit just to kind of try to get through it. I'm really, but I have to say, a lot of people seem to like it. I'm really surprised by what I think of as kind of misplaced nostalgia on this one. It is obviously a, you know, good looking game as it would be. It's a modern game. It runs very quickly. It's kind of good like that. It doesn't really have a lot of the modern complexities, but also capabilities of typical shooters of these days, the Battlefields, the Call of Duties, whatever. It's kind of old school, but it's also like overly simplistic. I don't know. I don't like multiplayer. That's typically my big draw. I've been playing through the single player. I find it incredibly frustrating. I'm on a level now where you have to kind of jump. It's like, you know, platforms and you're jumping, you're double jumping and jumping. But it's checkpoint based, right? So I have basically scaled what is essentially like a skyscraper and then headed out across an area. And then I miss jump and I die. And I go all the way back down to the beginning. You're like, okay. And then there's fighting that occurs along the way. And you go back up, you know, and now I miss the jump somewhere else. And you're dead. And you go all the way back down there. And you can only take so much of that before you're like, you know what? This isn't worth it. It's just, I don't know. So I don't know. I'm going to finish the single player thing just to do it. But it's not really doing it for me.
Good. You just saved me $60.
Yeah. Well, like, but seriously, read other reviews. I'm
no, people, you know, I was on the fence anyway.
Yeah.
I was on the fence. So now, you know, I'll watch more of the cutscenes, you know, the trailers.
I love the game.
Okay. Alex says he loves it. He just finished it Monday night.
Of course he did.
Insane level.
So how old was he when the original Doom came out?
Three? Were you alive when the original Doom came out? Do you remember it?
Yeah. I still love that game.
He still loves that game. We were playing it the other day.
It's a classic. That was a foundational. Foundational.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason I'm interested in. It's not my kind of game generally. He says get it on the PC. It's not as good on the Xbox One. It's a mouse and keyboard game. I agree with you on that, yeah.
Oh, but I mean, I think of it as sashaying. You know, I can't stand up and do this here, unfortunately. But back in the day, I had a friend who did a really good imitation of the guy from Doom if he was in real life. Yeah. And the way you kind of move sideways, and you bump into a wall, and then you come back, and you bump, you know. And it's just, you know, ridiculous.
Always with his hands out in front of him.
Yeah, yep.
Wait till you see it in VR. It'll be killer.
Yeah, they'll be all vomiting right. Everywhere. It'll be great.
Let's get our Enterprise pick of the week with Mary Jo Foley.
The Enterprise pick this week is a service Microsoft announced a year ago called Gig Jam. I don't know if you guys remember when I talked about this.
What?
Gig Jam. So it's easier to say what Gig Jam isn't than what it is. It's a kind of a collaboration service. But it's not an instant messaging or a screen sharing or a document collaboration service. The way Microsoft talks about it is they say it's a service for getting stuff done or getting work done. So what it does is it runs on Azure. There's a lightweight client that works on every version, every different operating system. And it kind of connects different line of business apps in the cloud and makes them able to talk to each other fairly transparently. So if you wanted to do a business task like show somebody in your sales department a contract, but you wanted to be able to redact sensitive information, you could use GigJam to do that in a simple step. And then once you complete that interaction with the person, it just disappears. Like the interaction disappears. So it's a very complicated service, but something, once you see it in person and try it in person, makes more sense. So right now, this week they opened up the preview of GigJam to the public, so you can request an invitation. Right now, the preview only works on Windows and Mac OS X, and iOS preview is coming soon. So if you go to the GigJam site, which you can find by just searching for it, you can request a preview and get in there and try that out now.
Cool.
GigJam.
GigJam.
I don't love the name.
Jam and Gigs.
Jam and Gigs, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the name helps obfuscate the intent, to be honest.
Yeah.
Slightly.
Yep.
Yeah. Slightly. Although I don't know what you would call that service obfuscate the name.
Yeah. No, that's
Daydream?
True.
Daydream? No, someone has that.
No, Daydream's taken twice.
Taken. Yeah.
Codename pick of the week.
Okay. Codename pick of the week is something I made the codename pick fairly recently. It was called Behai. B-E-I-H-A-I.
Okay.
And the reason...
Okay, you got to spell that. B-E-I-H-A-I. Okay, good.
B-E-I-H-A-I.
That's different.
B-E-I-H-A-I.
That's got different meaning. Okay. Behai.
Yes. So Behai, as far as we knew, was some kind of a secret project that Kudo Sonoda was working on at Microsoft. So Kudo Sonoda is one of the big names.
Because it comes to about 420 and say, I got to go work on Behai. It's my new project. I'll be back.
Exactly.
You have to say it as Matthew McConaughey.
Hey, all right.
You have to have your howl lens on. Like, yeah.
I'm going to work on Behai. I'll be back later.
Kudo Sonoda, who runs this new app team inside of Windows that we know very little about, he also has this new thing called the Evoke Studio that we found out through a job posting thanks to our friend, the Walking Cat. this new studio, Evoke, is building another application that's not Behai, but it's some kind of a digital life kind of experience. I think it's going to be based on that old Microsoft project called My Life Bits, which is all
that.
About assembling your photos and your videos.
Yeah, that's it. I couldn't think of the name of that thing.
Right. Cataloging them, making them accessible. It's almost like recording your life events and having it all
in Gordon Bell's project.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think so they're taking some of those learnings that they had from that project. They're adding in the OneDrive team. They're adding in Microsoft Research. And now this Windows App Studio under Kudo Sonoda are all working together on this new kind of thing.
Good.
That is like a digital memory service.
Because when I be high, I can't remember anything.
Leo, your files are right where we left them.
They're
right. I just
right
don't know where that is.
Great. Yeah. So if anyone knows about Behai or Evoke, we're trying to find out more about these things.
I actually love this idea. And what I'd like is something that would pull from all of the stuff I post everywhere and just take, like, kind of make montages.
Right.
Of social posts and pictures and videos and stuff like that. It'd be kind of cool. I guess that's kind of what this is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
We don't know.
We don't know a lot about it, just what's in the job postings. We know it's a service that they're working on, involves
idea.
Those teams. That's about it.
I like it.
Yep.
And finally, it's beer time.
It is.
What do we got?
Mary Jo, if I could interject just quickly, I want to reiterate that I had the greatest day of my life yesterday.
I saw you were at Hum. Or I'm sorry, do you call it Rattle?
Rattle.
I sound like an out-of-towner.
That's okay.
Where's Hum? You mean Rattle? It's over here.
Leo, you're talking to the guy who coined the phrase Pinterest. You're good.
I want to go to Hum.
Right. So yesterday at Rattle, Paul was in town for a meeting. And then I said, you know what? We have a beer night at Rattle. Avery Brewing is in town. Which just happens to be Paul's favorite brewery.
No.
Yep. No, literally.
Kismet, Paul.
I know.
I know.
And they had They had so many beers on tap from Avery, plus the guy from Avery was there. So we tried.
I think, attached to his leg like a small dog.
He did. He's like, where is that Paul guy? Oh, there he is. So there were so many, and so many kind of hard to get beers and kind of one off beers. So I, instead of picking one of those really hard to get ones, I picked a very easy to get one because I thought, you know, everyone should try a little Avery. And so Avery White Rascal, if you get to try this beer, a Belgian white beer, a little orange peel, a little spice in it.
Coriander.
Coriander, yep.
Yeah. But that's coriander is the seed of the cilantro plant, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Very light, easy to drink, good spring beer. Very. Mm-hmm. It's available year round. You see it in cans all over the place. So if you've never tried White Rascal and you can get your hands on a Rascal,
as we say,
I am so glad I don't live anywhere near you because I would be 1,000 pounds.
I know.
I would be drinking beer all the time. I don't know how you do it.
I walk a lot.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about New York, right? I've been doing that, walking to work, and it's been great. Mm-hmm. I love walking. And I think I got that when I lived on the East Coast, and walking was kind of more, you do more walking. Yeah. Here, there's big portions of town. There's no sidewalk.
So you're in California. What are you doing on your feet there? Get in the car.
Yeah. It's too bad.
I know. It is.
Anyway, walk a lot and drink more beer.
Paul had another beer he loved.
What did you love, Paul?
So, are you going to make that your pick?
I had a lot of Avery beer yesterday. I'm kind of embarrassed to say how many. But one of them was called Calipigian, which we all were kind of making fun of because it's such an awesome word.
I think that means like, you got a big butt. I don't want to say anything, but I think
I think that is actually what it means.
It does.
I thought of them as the rivals of Thrace back in the days of ancient Greece.
Yeah.
But it's actually I don't even know what type of beer it really is. But what it seemed like to me was a barley wine beer. This was 18.5% alcohol, if I'm not mistaken.
Having well shaped buttocks.
No, 17%.
Wow. That's
well, you
strong.
Will have well-shaped buttocks if you drink a lot of this. It was basically a glass of liquid sugar.
Oh. It was delicious.
It was really good.
Oh, man.
I think they call it an imperial stout. I think it has vanilla bean, coffee.
It's cake. Right. It's cake in a cup.
It is.
Yeah, it's an improvement over one of... I guess they have another beer, and they add, like you said, they add vanilla beans to it, coffee, cocoa,
it's a
et cetera.
It's a one-up on their beer called Tweak.
They tweak it with
vanilla beans and stuff, and
I can't believe they have a beer named Calipigian.
I know. I can't. That's Paul wanted me to make it the beer pick, and I'm like, I don't think I want to make it.
Like big Calipigians, I cannot lie.
Well, I mean, Avery, the one you chose, White Rascal, is a classic, and actually the nice thing about that as a pick is that's the one Avery beer you'll be able to find all over the country. It's out there. You know, that one gets good distribution.
Right.
So that is, that's a solid wheat. But for those of us with more discerning palates, no.
I like the style of this brewery.
Yeah.
They've got the Dictator series. You can get the Kaiser, the Tsar, the Maharaja.
Yep. We had the Maharaja last night.
Wow. The Holy Trinity of Ales. That's the one I want. That's the Salvation, Hog Heaven, and the Reverend. They got a sense of humor here.
They do.
Yeah.
This place is fantastic, and I used to go visit them when they were just a hole in the wall down in the industrial district outside of Boulder, and now they have a brewery that's the size of the Death Star on the outskirts of town. It's unbelievable.
Oh, so they're Baston, a Baston company?
No, they're in Colorado. They're outside of Boulder.
Oh, okay. Now, I think this must be an error.
The Fertile Crescent that goes from Fort Collins down to Boulder. They're right at the end of that.
But they claim that this barrel age series is 100% alcohol by volume. That can't be. I don't know. Wow.
Well, it's pretty.
Tweak.
It's pretty hot.
Tweak is 17.
You know what the crazy thing is? It doesn't taste high alcohol at all.
Wow.
If you didn't know that was a 17% beer, you'd be like, oh, probably a 9.
I like the Calipigian. I'm going with the Calipigian.
It's like a Slurpee.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh. This show,
so
I tell you.
So
that's so good. Well, is there going to be a chance to drink with Mary and Mary Jo and Paul anytime soon? Did you have people over your event yesterday, or just the
no,
two
no,
of
we
you?
Just for us. Ourselves.
Just for us.
Yep.
Although
there were
Zach
so many beers to be tonight. Consumed, we didn't want
to. I would make the trip out there just for that. I swear to God.
Thursday's New Belgium night. That's another one of my favorites.
Love New Belgium.
Yep.
But now I'm an Edelbart guy. All Edelbart all the time.
Yep. No, that sounds like it's going to be good.
You're going to like it. I will put it down for you. I'll put it in our wine cellar. So it'll stay
in
a nice
cove,
54 in the cove. Nice 54 degrees. Yep. With 80% humidity day in, day out.
Nice.
Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott for all the goodness you can get in a website. And
yep.
Don't
it's,
forget
it's injected with my goodness. Sorry, that came out slightly wrong.
Yeah. I don't want to know.
No.
You can also find his books at the...
haven't even been drinking. It's still called Lean Pub.
LeanPub.com.
Yep.
Yes. And Mary Jo Foley's at AllAboutMicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. And she's sworn off book writing so she's had more time for beer drinking. And I like that.
I think it's a good
choice.
Priorities.
Yeah, you got to have your priorities in life. They join us every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific. Well, no, I'm sorry. I don't know why. I'm all thrown off. You got to be out of here in 4 minutes, Paul. That's it. I'm rushing along.
Oh, God. I forgot all.
Oh, man. You can join us for the show 11 a.m. Pacific. Normally, when there's no Google I.O., 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1800 UTC on Wednesdays. Or get it on demand after the fact. Audio and video. twit.tv/WW or wherever you get your podcasts. You know, I think we're going to do more Google I.O. tomorrow because guess what? Google's got the Chromebook keynote tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll be doing my usual MST
snarking
style.
I love it. Follow Paul on Twitter whenever there's an event. He's really good at the Apple events. But
he is.
Yeah, he's really good at those. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.